Start today with the eternal kingdom. And we're going to start looking at one passage in verse 1 Corinthians 15. And 1 Corinthians 15 starts in verse 20. Paul's been talking about resurrection in this chapter. Because there are people in the church in Corinth already who are denying a physical resurrection of the saints. So you can see early in the church, heresy's creeping in, even before Paul dies. So he's writing in 1 Corinthians to correct this misconception that there will not be physical resurrection. He says, without physical resurrection, our faith is worthless. So when he makes the point in 15:20, he's making the point that Jesus Christ has been raised from the dead. He was physically resurrected. If he's physically resurrected, he's the first fruits of those who are asleep, who have already physically died. In 15:22-26 then, he says, but however, all in Christ will be made alive. All believers who have been placed into Jesus Christ will be made alive, that is, resurrected, just like he was. But each in his own order, Christ the first fruits, after that, those who are Christ at his coming. At his coming involves two phases. First for the church at the rapture, then at the end of the tribulation for the tribulation saints, then at the Old Testament saints will be resurrected almost at the same time the tribulation saints are resurrected. So all believers for all ages at the end of the tribulation will be resurrected into resurrected bodies. Then comes the end. He knows nothing about 1,000 years between the coming of Jesus Christ and the eternal state. As the Jew would think about the Old Testament, he would view it as the kingdom of God is going to come and last forever. And they viewed it as a physical state. He doesn't know that it's going to end after 1,000 years. When he hands over the kingdom, and that's the kingdom of Daniel 2 and 7, because Paul says he's handing over the kingdom to the God and Father, when he has abolished all rule and all authority and all power, for he, that is Jesus, must reign, again, I put in there for the 1,000 years, because that's how long he will reign on earth, until he, that is the Father, has put all enemies under his feet. And the last enemy that is abolished is death. And death is not abolished until after the 1,000 years are completed. Why? Because we've seen from Revelation already, Old Testament, Hebrew Scriptures, that death will exist in the millennial kingdom. And death is not abolished until the millennial kingdom is over. But you can see from the progression here, you have Jesus Christ being the first one to be resurrected. There's several resurrections after that. He's going to reign until death is abolished. Once death is abolished, you enter the eternal state. What we're going to talk about today is not the millennial kingdom, but the eternal kingdom. So, the question is, how do you get from this? This is a picture from the millennial state, lion lays down with the lamb. But this is depicting millennial time. How do you get from that to this? This eternal glorious state, which is described in Revelation chapter 21, 22. The New Jerusalem. The eternal kingdom is many, many times larger than the earthly or millennial Jerusalem down here. This is 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles. So you place that over Jerusalem, you've covered most of Europe. New Jerusalem is going to rest over the city of Jerusalem, which is the millennial city. My contention is, and my question is, really, will people in physical bodies be in contact with those who are in resurrected bodies? Meaning, will the people down here who are living in physical bodies in millennial Israel, will they be in contact with people who are living in a resurrected state in the New Jerusalem? David Larson says, those raised up from the dead will live and operate from the New Jerusalem that's hovering over the earth. Mortals will live on the earth down here. The resurrected people will live up here, but there'll be an intermingling of the heavenly and the earthly. Jerusalem above, the connection is this Mount Zion, earthly Jerusalem and heavenly Jerusalem. That's where the connection is. And remember what Isaiah said, it is the chief of the mountains. It is where all the nations are going to come. It's the head of all governments. How do you get from the millennial kingdom to the eternal state? Revelation 19:11 to 20:10 describes it. Well, the first step is Jesus has to return. The next step, the beast and the false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. That's the next thing that happens. He's going to get rid of these guys. These were the leaders of the tribulation age. Next step, then, is Satan is not cast into the lake of fire. Notice that. He's bound for 1,000 years. He's tied up into the abyss, the lid's put on, and he's chained in there for 1,000 years. Then thrones are set up, and this is where the saints are going to rule for the 1,000 years. By saints, he means the resurrected saints. My question, then, goes back to where are these people going to live? Is Jesus going to have his bride live outside the house? That, to me, is a ludicrous concept. The bride of Jesus Christ is the church. I hold that the church is going to live in the city that he has prepared for us to live in. But we are going to reign and rule with him during the 1,000 years. Because the bride of the king is a queen. Satan is released after the 1,000 years for this massive final war. That's also described in Revelation 20. And the last step is then he's beat. Fire comes from heaven. And I think fire comes out of that New Jerusalem that's hovering over the earth at that point. Destroys the army, destroys Satan, and destroys the entire world. And then Satan is cast into the lake of fire. Why was the lake of fire created according to Jesus? It was never created for man. It was created for Satan and his angels. Now there's no men except for the beast and the false prophet in the lake of fire at this point. The 1,000 years is over. It gives you an idea of the sinful heart of man. Satan's been put in an abyss. Can't tempt man. They got a perfect government, a perfect environment, a perfect king, a perfect ruler, a perfect judge, a glorious temple, the glorious city of New Jerusalem hovering over the earth that everybody can see, and Satan's going to be released from the abyss and find enough people to follow him that they won't be able to number them. Be like the sands of the seashore. That is the purpose, I believe, for the millennium. It's for God to show us what our hearts, our wills, are really like apart from him. A place where everything is fair. Men are going to rebel. The 1,000 years is over, but the kingdom goes on. And this is where we go into Revelation 20, verse 11. That's the end of this heaven and earth. And I want you to notice something. In Revelation 20, verse 11. Verse 10 picks up the previous step. The devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also. They're already there. They've been there 1,000 years. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Meaning they're not going to be annihilated. They're going to be there forever and ever. Then verse 11, and I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away and no place was found for them. Notice this. At the time that the great white throne described in verse 11 is set up, what's gone? Heaven and earth. At the time the great white throne is set up. So when that fire comes down from heaven to destroy Satan and his armies, earth and heaven are done away with at the same point. Peter describes it in his book when it says that God promised never to destroy the earth with water again. He's going to destroy the earth with fire. I think that what he's talking about this is this event. Okay, then verse 12 says, I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne and the books were open. These are the unbelievers. But these dead people are called dead because they're not believers. They've never been born again. And they're now going to be judged and cast into the lake of fire where the false prophet, the beast, and the devil already are. From the very earliest creation all the way down to the end of the millennium, all the people who get killed in this final war, they're going to stand now for judgment. All the people who lived in the Old Testament that built idols and rebelled against God, they're now going to stand judgment. All the kings, all the rulers, all the rich people. And we will be standing behind Jesus at this great white throne watching as they go by. So it says the heaven and earth, they fled away, and then the great white throne is set up, and that's final judgment. Revelation 20:15 says it. If anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. To not be in the book of life is not to be born again. You're going into the lake of fire. That's the ultimate eternal death. That's not just being in a grave. This is ultimate eternal death, wide awake, in a body that's never going to wear out, suffering torment forever and ever and ever and ever. Death, in verse 14, death and Hades, anyone who's died, anyone who's been a grave, anyone is cast in the lake of fire. Now you've got everybody taken care of. Believers have already been resurrected. Believers who lived in the millennium in physical bodies, at the end of the millennium, they'll just be snatched, bang, taken to glory. So heaven and earth, it says they fled away. So the next thing that we see in the flow in the book of Revelation is a scene that involves one single verse. A new heaven and a new earth. Revelation 21:1. It says in verse 11, and I saw a great white throne. It says in 20:11, and I saw a great white throne. In 21:1 it says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. These are little scenes that he throws out. Says, here's what I saw here, and now here's what I saw here. Why does he now see a new heaven and a new earth? Because before the great white throne, earth and heaven fled away in 2011. So God's going to make a new heaven and a new earth, and the new heaven and the new earth is not going to involve any unbelievers. And there's no longer any sea. That means it's not an earth like the earth we think about, and it's not an earth like the millennium, because the millennium, there are seas, described as in the book of Isaiah and Zechariah. In this earth, there's no sea, there's no water, meaning there's no division at all. Unbelievers are now all in the lake of fire. All believers are in the New Jerusalem. And that's the way it's going to be forever and ever. Earthly Jerusalem is part of the earth that flees away. It's completely destroyed. When Satan brings his army up to attack that Mount Zion and that city, it's gone after that. It's completely gone. This is the new Jerusalem. It's going to last forever and ever over a new heavens and a new earth. So the new Jerusalem remains with a new heaven and a new earth. Now John is going to give further description of the city itself. This is what he's going to do for the rest of the book. Revelation 21, 2 through 8 talks about the holy city. I saw a holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them, and he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, and there shall no longer be any mourning, crying, or pain. The first things have passed away. Now, there's elements here that are millennial, and there's elements here that are eternal. As it should be, because the Old Testament viewed this kingdom as an eternal kingdom. But now what John is putting together here are two different elements, kind of two different time frames. Now notice he says 21:2, this holy city is called New Jerusalem. It's coming down out of heaven from God. And it's been made ready like a bride adorned for her husband. And it says that God now is going to live among men. That is language of Jesus talking about the kingdom on earth. May the will of God be done on earth just like it is in heaven. And Isaiah is describing this kingdom is going to be on earth where the lion will lay down with the lamb. And he describes that God has promised in Jeremiah and Isaiah and Ezekiel that God is going to dwell among men on the earth. And so you get that language here where it says God is among men. He shall dwell among them on the earth. What I think is very telling is Revelation 21:4. He says, I shall wipe every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death. There shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. Why does he talk about crying and mourning and tears and don't worry, there's not going to be any more death? I want you to go back. I want you to look at Revelation 7. At the beginning of chapter 7, he's sealing 144,000 men who will go out into the world to witness to the world during the tribulation. They will survive the tribulation, the entire thing. The end of chapter 7 is describing what are the fruits of their ministry. And in verse 9 it says, a multitude is following them, which no one could count, standing before the throne, before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, palm branches in their hands. Why are there palm branches? These are people ready to go into the millennium. John asked this question, who are these in white robes? And where are they from? And where they come? And verse 14, it says, he said to me, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation. They've washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. It says above, they're standing with palm branches in their hands. They've come out of the great tribulation. They've survived it. For this reason, they are before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. And the temple would be the glorious temple on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. He who sits on the throne shall spread his tabernacle before them. That's Jesus. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither sun shall beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd, and shall guide them in the springs of the water of life. And God shall wipe every tear from their eyes. You think they haven't suffered? We don't think about what these people are going to go through during this seven-year period and surviving this tribulation period. Can you imagine the saints coming out of the great tribulation when they are now standing before Mount Zion with Jesus, he having brought them through the great tribulation, the comfort and the joy they're going to feel? So when they come out, no wonder you find language in Revelation 7. I'm going to wipe every tear from your eyes. So Revelation 21, 2 through 8, the holy city, New Jerusalem. You go on in the next few verses that really kind of is out of order. Because in verse 5 he says, he that sits on the throne, he says, behold, I'm making all things new. Right, for these words are faithful and true. And this is God and Jesus from the throne speaking, saying, I'm making all things new. I'm in the process of doing that. Now notice what he says. He says, it's done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of water of life without cost. He who overcomes will inherit these things. I will be his God. He will be my son. But for the cowardly and the unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake of fire that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. He's going back and talking about something that looks like it's already over with, doesn't it? They will be in the lake of fire. Well, I thought they already were, according to the sequential events of the book. No, he's going back and he's making a statement that really applies to all readers for all time. When we look at this right here today, which group am I in? That's the question that should pose as any reader reads this little section. Where do I sit? Where do I stand? 5:20-9-22:5 really is going to describe the city that comes down out of heaven that replaces Babylon. If you quickly read that, 21:9-10. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me and said this, "Come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." And he carried me away in spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. Now I want you to contrast that with Revelation 17. Revelation 17:1. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, who the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality." Jump to verse 3. "He carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and he showed me this woman sitting on a scarlet beast." What woman is that? It's Babylon. Who replaces Babylon? The bride of Christ, which is also not just a group of people, but a city. The city of New Jerusalem is described as the bride of Christ in Revelation 21:9, just as the unbelieving world is described as the city of Babylon in Revelation 17. Revelation 17 and 18, Babylon is destroyed. Revelation 21, the New Jerusalem comes down out of heaven to rest where and to dwell where? Among men on earth for 1,000 years. And now there's language that's really kind of mixed. 21:11 on describes the physical characteristics of this city. But if you look at like 21:24, "The nations shall walk by its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it." See, that poses the question. If there are kings on the earth who are bringing their glory, and that means they're believers, believing nations, like we saw in Zechariah 14 last week, they come up and celebrate the Feast of Booths, they've got to come into it from outside. Where are they living? On the earth. So you have things in this passage that describe the millennial kingdom, but you also have things in this passage that are describing the eternal state. Notice it goes on to say that there's kings of the earth who bring their glory into it. They have access. But look at 27. "Nothing unclean and no one who practices abominations shall ever come into it, but only those whose name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life." Now, if there's a point where they could come into it but don't or won't, they've got to be living somewhere other than the lake of fire. But we also know that people who are not written in the Book of Life are going to be in the lake of fire. I think Revelation 21:9-22:5 is talking about the bride of the Lamb. And the bride of the Lamb is the city where the bride is going to dwell. If the bride's going to dwell there, we have to be there during the millennium. Unless, there's another option here, you don't believe there's going to be a millennium. If you don't believe there's going to be a millennium, that solves all the problems. But I hold there will be a millennium. And the bride is going to live in this city. The bride's not going to live in Nebraska or Missouri or Salt Lake City. And so this called there the holy city, Jerusalem. So the question is, where will the bride live during the 1,000-year reign on earth? I think right here, Revelation 21-22. Read it as this. It's both the city of the millennium and the eternal city. It's describing both aspects. It's not an either-or thing. It sits above during the millennial kingdom over the earthly Jerusalem. But once that's all destroyed, it doesn't change. It's the same forever. So if I read it as this is describing both the city that's going to exist in the millennium and the city that's going to go on forever. But you know what? No matter how you read it, we will be there. We're going to be in glory with Christ. Next time, we're going to do a final word, just a few things on what Jesus says at the end as he calls people to salvation, and then a flyover over the whole book. Dear Father, we thank you again for this.